Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. Today, we're in our third segment of eight in our fourth annual franchise legal series. Amy Chang of Chang Cohen will be my guest, or is my guest today, and we'll be talking about private equity and franchising, and specifically understanding private equity in franchising. But just a couple of housekeeping notes. Would like to thank last week's guest, Lee Plave of Plave Cook. We had a great conversation about data and information and the responsibilities of making sure that the data is collected correctly, stored and protected correctly. A lot of great information out of that show, and I would like to also thank all our great listeners. The first two shows in the fourth annual series, the first one was with Michael Laidhold the week before, and we talk about franchise sales best practices. Both shows have had record numbers of on-demand listenership by the Monday following each of the shows, and I'm sure today will follow suit as well the rest of the series. Next week, my guest is DLA Piper's Barry Heller. We'll be talking about franchisor litigation issues. Followed the following week by Mark Kirsch of Great Plant Moody. We'll be talking about franchise broker relationships and the legal considerations. And then May 16th, Lane Fisher returning for his fourth appearance in the legal series, followed by Jonathan Redgrave the following week. And then Dean Heil from the IFA will be giving us a IFA Legal Symposium recap, and that'll be on May 30th. Looking ahead to June, coming out of the legal series, June is our franchise model series. And, of course, we're spending so much time during this eight-week period with our fourth annual legal series. Legal won't be part of the franchise model series, but, of course, is a very integral part of the franchise model. So the show, the series in June will start off with consumer marketing, and then it will go to operations and franchise relations, followed by franchise sales and development, followed by technology and franchising. Really going to be a very good series. During the summer, we'll do in August and July and August, will be the Franchisor Spotlight Series. It'll be our first ever broadcast throughout the summer. It'll be 9 weeks of some of the leading franchisors that have utilized best practices to become successful in today's very competitive business environment. It will not be promotional, so don't think you're going to be listening to some CEO, promote their company. It'll be entirely how they've been utilizing best practices in building their franchise organization. And then, of course, in the fall, we'll be focusing on public affairs in September, and of course that'll be in conjunction with the IFA's public affairs conference in Washington. And then in October and November, we'll really focus on franchise sales and development, and that of course will be around the West Coast Franchise Expo, as well as Franchise Updates Leadership Conference in Atlanta. And in talking about, Franchise Update Group, I am happy to again announce, as I did last week and introduce them as such, they are one of our new strategic partners on Franchise Today, and we really look forward to working more closely with Therese and Gary and Steve Olson and the entire Franchise Update team. Of course, our other strategic partner is Fishman Public Relations and Marketing. We're always excited to be working with them. And then our newest strategic partner just announced yesterday is Elements Local and Jeremy LeDuc and his team. And they'll be our technology partner, really helping us to expand the reach of Franchise Today, as well as France Summit, also another production of Franchise Foundry. So really some exciting times. And, of course, upcoming events right now, we have the Franchise Finance Conference going on in Las Vegas by Franchise Times. It's kind of it's one of the reasons why we picked private equity in franchising today, because obviously that is a big part of franchise finance today. And then next month in May, I'll be speaking at the IFA's FranCamp, the first ever Digital Marketing and Technology Conference in Atlanta, Georgia. And then the following month will be the Franchise Update Group's Franchise Consumer Marketing Conference, as well as IFE, the International Franchise Expo in New York. So really some exciting things going on in franchising. And we're really pleased to really be moving forward with our fourth annual legal series. As I said, the first week we talked about franchise best practices. Last week we spoke about, you know, data and information, and we've got a lot of things coming up down the pipeline. But today we want to talk about understanding private equity in franchising. And I really couldn't think of another person this year than Amy Chang and Chang Cohen. I've known Amy for a short while, worked with her with a mutual client, but really got to see Amy in action last year at the first ever Dealmakers Summit, which was basically an introduction of private equity firms with franchise funds. And it was really an interesting conference, and I look forward to this year's conference as well, and we'll talk some more about that during the show. So Amy is the co-founder of Chang Cohen in Chicago, Illinois. She concentrates her practice in domestic and international commercial transactions, general corporate and franchise licensing and distribution law. She represents franchisors on the structuring and operation of their franchise programs through all different phases of development. She also represents non-U.S.-based franchisors expanding into the U.S. She has extensive experience structuring drafting agreements for very complex franchise licensing and distribution relationships and in regulatory compliance. Amy, welcome to Franchise Today.
Thank you very much, Paul. My pleasure to be on here.
Well, it's really a pleasure having you today. I think along the lines of with Susan Blackbeth, of course, the one of the to me foremost thought leaders with respect to private equity and franchising, and really bringing the private equity players and franchisors together. And I often refer to her as the Energizer Bunny in franchising, and knowing how busy you are and all that you gave to Dealmaker Summit last year, as well as being a mom and stuff, I think I have to put you into that superwoman category as well.
Well, no, I can't possibly compare with Susan. Energizer Bunny, I think, is a great way to describe her. And last year's Dealmaker Conference, I thought, was first annual conference, and I'm so happy that she will be doing that again, because just from last year, we've seen a lot of conversation and a lot of networking that have developed and relationships that have developed. So it's a great conference.
Well, I look forward to doing another special event on Franchise Today with Susan as we get closer to the conference, as well as to help, as I did last year, in helping to promote it and doing anything that I possibly can. But I know there's a very strong organizational team with, of course, Susan and Marianne and Thelma. And I know it's in good hands, but obviously always willing to help. And help spread the word. So I'm definitely looking forward to it. And what a great venue last year. I mean, and Chicago, God, could the weather have been any better last year? It was magnificent.
We planned it just for the conference.
Yeah,
it was especially
I'm sure.
Exciting for us, being the sponsor of the conference, for it to be in Chicago, which, as you know, Paul, the many conferences that in the franchise conferences that, you know, occur every year, very few are in Chicago. So we're very happy to have actually a conference in our hometown.
And you have again, Chang Cohen has again stepped up to the plate, and you're again the platinum sponsor this year, are you not?
Correct. That's correct.
Oh, great. Yeah.
Yeah, we're very excited about it.
Yeah, really great. You and your team did a great job last year. I sat in on the session last year with the private equity people as you were talking about, you know, some of them were just being introduced. It was really great. We'll talk more about the Dealmaker Summit as we get closer to the event. Today we're talking about, you know, understanding private equity and franchising. And I guess the lead question has to be, Annie, is, you know, why are private equity companies interested in franchising? Because we hear about it all the time. I know there was just a deal announced yesterday. I received a press release about the Zips dry cleaning company being purchased by a private equity company. So, and we hear, of course, you know, Roark Capital and just a host of others and some not so known. So why are private equity companies interested in franchising?
Well, I think with the franchise industry, it's really one that it's so prominent that private equity companies really just can't ignore it. So according to the 2007 Economic Census Franchise Report that was issued by the U.S. Census Bureau, and this was the first, I believe, franchise report ever issued by the U.S. Census Bureau, the Bureau concluded that franchise businesses account for over 10% of all U.S. businesses with paid employees. And that's a huge sector of the economy. And in addition, I think private equity companies are realizing, and especially looking at the past, you know, 5-6 years, and having witnessed how volatile the different investments are, real estate, for example, has been so volatile. They've turned to looking at the franchise industry. Franchise companies, in general, have a relatively predictable revenue stream, all things considered, right? I mean, we know that if you look at do your due diligence, you can figure out what's the percentage of, you know, franchise companies receive a percentage of the gross income from their franchisees, not net. They have companies with agreements for definitive term. So, you know, there is an income stream. I know that there are obviously closures, and especially with the economy, nothing is for sure, right?
Sure.
But if you do your due diligence, you really can, you know, come to a pretty good conclusion of what is the investment going to look like, and what is the potential income stream, at least with more definitive terms than you would looking at other real estate investments or other investments in other industries. And I think that's why private equity companies are really focusing on the industry. And plus, there's so many different industries to look at. You know, it's not just technology. It's not just restaurants. Franchising is in, you know, all sorts of different industries. So that really opens up the door for different private equity companies.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, we hear about all the private equity firms and the venture capital firms in and around technology, and then of course we hear the glorious franchise organizations, the large restaurant brands that were gobbled up by some private equity players. And there was really private equity players really weren't looking at other organizations in other
right.
industry segments outside of franchising. I was really happy, obviously, when the Dwyer Group had their arrangements with a private equity firm, because to me, especially as I look at it with Franchise Foundry, the company that I am the CEO at, we're a small private equity player, but of course, you know, dealing in, you know, predominantly the non-food service side. So it
right.
was great to see the interest in the non-food service industry segments like where the Dwyer Group plays. You know, also I saw that, you know, talking to a lot of the private equity players last year at the Dealmaker Summit, there were so many that I spoke with, even some of the larger ones, that really were having a hard time getting their arms around the non-food service side. And obviously, they're slowly starting to embrace it. They realize there are far greater opportunities than they originally thought. And quite frankly, there's a lot of good operators in these non-food service franchise organizations that I think people need to take note and realize that these are good systems, they're proven systems. I mean, you know, one comes to mind immediately is how can you not look at organizations like, you know, PostNet with Steven Greenbaum? I mean, you know, just, and there's so many others like that. So, you know, as franchise organizations are being looked at outside of the food service, you know, what size companies do private equity companies typically look to invest in?
Oh, I think, you know, it really depends on the private equity company. And that's, I think, the great thing about the growth of the investment of private equity and franchising is that there's so many more possibilities out there. You know, 10 years ago, we mostly saw companies like Roar Capital, Cypress, invest in companies in probably over $20 million in revenue, and the transaction sizes are typically at least $15 million to, you know, hundreds of millions, right? We have companies like North Capital Partner, for example, who just bought Curves with over 4,000 units worldwide. These are huge transactions, and a lot of franchise companies just are not that big, right?
Right.
But there are now more recently quite a few private equity companies that are smaller that are interested in investments that are $5 to $15 million in capital. So I think that really opens up the door for a lot of franchise companies that are younger, that need capital investment, that may have, you know, founders that just don't have the capital or the management to be able to grow their company.
Sure. Sure, and I think also, you know, creativity is starting to come into play. I know as we talk with private equity firms that might be interested in a certain brand but feel that it doesn't quite meet the financial levels that they're looking for, and they've actually gotten a little creative and say, well, what happens if we bought this one and then looked at some type of merger down the road? Would it work? So I think they're really, truly starting to think outside the box and realize that as long as they have definitive goals and objectives, they can work towards this in a variety of different ways. So, but again, it comes down to each of the franchisors, whether your aspirations are to eventually do business with a private equity firm or continue to grow your organization. I mean, it all comes down to, you know, unit economics, the financials, the private equity firms, banks, lenders, et cetera, are always going to look at the bottom line. They're looking at the success rates. They're going to look at, you know, failure rates. They're going to look at improvements to the system, how you bring in technology into the system, and a host of different things. And I think one of the first things that I would definitely caution people listening to the show when they're considering private equity is really understand if private equity is right for you. You know, is it in line with your objectives, you know, your company's objectives? Are you looking for, you know, growth capital or liquidity? What are the PE firms' expectations for returns and timing? And I think that's something, obviously, that needs to be considered. Just because one PE firm might have certain expectations doesn't mean another one's going to have the same. You know, can your brand, the way it's been built, meet those expectations? Just a host of different things. So with that in mind, you know, what are some of your thoughts as far as, you know, advising, you know, potentially some of your clients or potential clients with respect to exploring private equity and coming to the realization, I mean, to the reality of, is private equity right for your organization and for you if you're going to be part of the transition?
Absolutely. I think it really, like you said, Paul, it depends on your goal. And if your the growth you want is slow growth and you want steady growth and you want to be involved in the business and you see your franchise business as your baby that you can't let go of, I'm not sure that private equity is for you. But, you know, it really depends on the company. There are private equity companies, like you said, that are very creative these days who may invest and who may prefer not to be the controlling partner and who may invest capital and allow the management to continue to run the company and to grow with it. But even with that, you still have to have the same goals, right? At the end of the day, a private equity is interested in its investment and growing it, and you know it's what the bottom line is. So you have to make sure that you are in sync with the company. But if you are interested, there are many things that franchisors, I think, should do years ahead in preparation for a potential transaction with a private equity company. It's not something I think that you wake up and say, well, it's time for me to do a deal with a private equity company and to get capital. I mean, really have to plan ahead, and that's one thing that I advise clients, even in their infancy stages, to think about what is your future, think about what's your 5-year goal, what's your 10-year goal, and if private equity is something that you are interested in, then you've got to plan ahead. You got to run your business so that a private equity can come in and will be interested in it. You have to have solid contracts, for example, that give franchisors, the franchisor entity, the ability to grow. You just said, Paul, a few minutes ago that private equities are now looking at possibly buying the same franchise companies in the same sector and possibly combining them, right? Well, in order to do that, and if a private equity company is interested in doing that, well, it will only look at companies with franchise agreements that will allow the franchisor and its affiliates to have different brands in the same sector. If you have a franchise agreement that says, the franchisor and none of its affiliates will have any competitive business in your territory, well, you've pretty much locked yourself out of the portfolio of quite a few private equity companies who may be interested in buying competitive brands and combining them. So things like that are many emerging franchisors don't really think about that are very important to talk to your counsel about when you're in your early stages and you're drafting an agreement, because it may not impact the franchisor in the beginning, but if the goal is to eventually be part of a private equity portfolio, it is very important to keep those things in consideration.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, not closing the door right out of the box by letting the ego and the control factor get in the way and say, I'm not going to allow any other types of brands and competing and blah, 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 and they wind up, closing the doors of any potential deal down the road. And I think that kind of just lends to taking a moment, even at the earliest stages of developing a franchise, and understanding what the potential exit strategies are.
Exactly.
Selling the company, bringing on private equity, bringing on a partner, or whatever. And too many times, and I know you see it all the time, individuals, business owners, entrepreneurs don't want to think about the exit, the what ifs, and of course I always talk about not only the involuntary ones, the ones that are planned, but I mean the voluntary ones and the ones that are planned. But what about the involuntary ones? Looking at situations that if there's a financial need, if other capital is necessary in order to do what they want to do. I mean, it's just a host of different things.
When they're negotiating the agreement, for example, what if some franchisees want the right to terminate? And a lot of franchisors, they really want to get out of the system. I will let them, so I'm not going to penalize them for that. Well, now you may have all these agreements with a right to exit, and there's really and think about how much that diminishes the value of that agreement, right? When a private equity is valuing a company, it looks at the income stream. If there's a potential for that income stream to just disappear overnight without any compensation to the franchisor, the value of a company has significantly decreased.
Right.
So issues like that that you really have to think about.
So if private equity is even on the tip of different franchisors' minds, what are some of the steps they should initially take in preparation, looking long-term, of those possibilities? What are some of the preparations they could do now towards that long-term objective?
Well, one, and I'm not self-promoting here, but really it is to hire a franchise counsel. Make sure that you hire not only franchise counsel, but counsel that is familiar with these types of transactions, that understands private equity and probably also has been on the other side. There's nothing like working with counsel who's also represented private equity to really understand what they're looking for. You want someone who's experienced, who's going to be able to guide you. and talk about these issues when you're preparing your franchise documents so that your counsel was aware of your goals, so he or she can help you prepare for that. And the second is to think about this when you're negotiating your agreements. Oftentimes, and we just talked about several provisions in the agreement that you might not want to negotiate if this is a possibility for you in the future, but also how you negotiate, how you keep track of those things. If you have 100 agreements and they all are different and you don't know where those changes are, well, it's going to the due diligence process for a private equity company when they do your due diligence is going to be very difficult. And again, it's all about the value of the company, right? What does that mean and how can that diminish the value? And another is to organization. I can't reiterate how important it is to my clients to have their franchise files organized. And with technology these days, it's on the one hand very easy to do. On the other, easy for things to get lost. So whether it's correspondence files and operational or development, remember, at some point, if you're interested in partnering with a private equity company, they're going to want to do their due diligence and understand how you manage your system. And so think about it in terms of if I am someone who's going to be reviewing the system 5-10 years from now, what will I want to see? And make sure you keep records that will allow a company to really understand how your system works, what are the potential issues in the system, and be able to easily do the due diligence. If a company, if I'm representing a private equity company and I do due diligence on a system that has, who can't give me franchise agreements and the amendments to the agreements, when I ask for correspondence for franchisees, they can't send me those. When I ask for FDD receipts, they can't find those. Well, my report to the private equity company is going to have so many caveats and so many red flags for them that they're going to once again go back and not only think about, okay, do I really want to take on this risk, but what does that do to the price? Right. Mm-hmm. If I have all this potential liability out there because this company, of the 100 units has 5 franchise item 23 receipts to the FDD, there's a lot of potential liability there. So even if the company ends up, you still successfully sell to a private equity, that potential liability may diminish the value of your company. So those are all things that you should really think about. And finally, I think everybody talks about networking, and I know it's too often used, but in this context, I think it is important if they're in the near future you are interested to start talking to people who are in private equity, start going to conferences like DealMakers Conference, and just getting your brand out there and your name out there.
Well, certainly, networking is a big part of it, even if it's from from the personal educational standpoint. I definitely wouldn't recommend somebody consider private equity until they really understood the nature of the beast, and even before talking with a private equity firm, understanding what that's going to look like. We're on Franchise Today live right now. My guest is Amy Chang of Chang Cohen. And we're talking about understanding private equity in franchising. Amy, obviously a lot of due diligence has to be done, but I think it still comes back to the basics. And I think this obviously transcends to franchise organizations at any stage, and it comes down to the relationships. How important is it to private equity firms that there are good relationships? And I'm not just talking about agreements. I'm talking about, genuine relationships that the franchisor has with the franchisees, and even more specifically with key multi-unit franchisees that might have significant number of units in the realm of the entire organization.
Oh, it is absolutely what it's a priority. You can't the franchise company and franchise systems. It's all about relationships, right? You may have the perfect contract, but if you have horrible relationship with your franchisee, and you have ongoing disputes with your franchisee association, and there's evidence that franchisees are just not happy, that is. You know, that's something that does come out not only in due diligence, but you know it's something that franchise is top priority. When we look mm-hmm. at when we represent private equity companies, we don't just look at the contracts. We look at the relationships, like you said, and how happy are the franchisees, and you can tell that from you know whether there's litigation, whether there's a franchisee association, whether there's a franchise advisory council that's set up to work together with the franchisor. And so all those things are very important. And finally, private equity companies that are successful in acquiring franchise companies understand this, and they work very hard from a relation standpoint when they do the acquisition. The integration of a private equity company into a franchise company is something that should take months. It's not something that you just announce to the to the franchise system overnight.
Sure.
And say, here we are, we're going to take over now. It's that transition. It is so important, and I've witnessed transitions happen, so smoothly because it's been well planned. They've had the management involved the whole entire time. They've been communications with the franchisee, so they're not scared about the new ownership.
Sure.
The last thing you want is, a group of franchisees who are hesitant to deal and who are suspicious of the new ownership. So you want to make sure that relationship is continuous and there's not a hitch in the transition.
Yeah, I think it also has to do with how the potential deal will be structured and if the current founders and management team are going to be part of the new entity moving forward, even if it's through a transition period. Obviously, that's going to lend more towards a level of comfort and confidence with the franchisees.
Absolutely, absolutely, and most companies, see that.
Sure, so as we were talking about, multi-unit franchisees and its importance, especially with the ones that have significant stake in the brand through, obviously the number of units. The big thing, we hear this more in the food service side than we do in the non-food service side, although we're starting to see some of it in the non-food service side, with respect to units in development. We see a lot of times deals being worked out where, somebody's going to open up 5 locations, but they've signed a development agreement for another 60 over the next 10 years. How do development, units in development, work with respect to, how is it looked at in the realm of a potential private equity transaction?
I think it's obviously a plus when you have a lot of agreements that may have, but it also depends on what percentage of that. It depends on what percentage of that relative to the number of open locations. So if you have a 80 units open, but you have signed development agreements for opening another 100 units over the next 2 years, well, there's a lot of risk there.
Sure.
Are those units really going to open? In the due diligence, in the evaluation, that all gets taken into consideration.
So, yeah, definitely a lot of risk. Is it reality? I would imagine some past performance has to be looked at as well, that certain development agreements have been on target according to a development schedule. Some of that has to be looked at historically as well. But, we hear so many times of franchise organizations, especially very young emerging brands, that seem to be hot and unique and have, just a handful of units open. But, we got 400 in development. And sometimes I'd like to fast forward and really look at, the historical data and say, how many actually opened up.
Open,
and,
right.
And, yeah.
Right. On the other hand, I think those types of companies are, you know, potentially great investment for private equity companies, but it's because it's often when a company is growing so fast that it needs the capital infrastructure and that a private equity company can help provide. So it needs significant capital to increase support, you know, from a technology standpoint. So in order to be able to support that type of rapid growth, capital is necessary, and it's more capital than the income stream from the royalties that the franchisor requires. So it is a great opportunity for private equity to see that. But as you said, you do need to look at not only the historical growth to see if, you know, have development obligations been successfully complied with, and also the multi-unit operators, the experience of those operators. So if you got four or five significant multi-unit operators in a system, I think a private equity company is going to look seriously at the history, operational history of those operators. It may even require the franchisor to, you know, just work on a transaction, for example, that we know that the income stream, 40% of the income stream really is from one multi-unit master franchisee. And one of the conditions to that transaction was that the private equity company got an opportunity to meet with that franchisee and is comfortable that relationship is smooth and that relationship is going to continue.
Sure. I mean, even from a good old-fashioned respect standpoint, I mean, if he represents 40% of the brand, I mean, you would think you would want to bring that type of individual in. And just like, you know, private equity firms, or the reasons private equity firms even come to the table or are allowed to come to the table and looked at coming to the table by the franchisor, there's a host of reasons as to why. You touched on a few of them. You know, maybe there is fast growth, but they can't keep up with, you know, technology and operations in order to get those stores open. So, along with a variety of reasons, there's got to be a variety of reasons why a private equity firm would be looking in, and that, I think, would lend towards there being a difference in private equity firms. Some that might look at short-term, some might look at long-term, some might look at, you know, breaking apart the organization for a variety of reasons. So what are some of the different – how are private equity firms different?
You know, it really depends on the philosophy of the firm. And when you speak with the private equity firms, most of them are very upfront about their philosophy. Some of them make it absolutely clear that they only want to do transactions where they partner with the existing owner, so that they don't want the existing owners out of the picture. They want the existing owner to sometimes retain some ownership interest so that they are still motivated to work with the private equity firm and really be a partner with them. There are other private equity firms that really don't want the existing owners involved, and they want to be able to operate the brand and then grow the brand. And most of the time, those are probably private equity firms that either have already existing companies in the portfolio in the same sector, you know, like you said earlier, where they can combine maybe the there's synergy between the two brands, and they may not need the existing ownership. So you really need to, as a franchisor, when you talk in a private equity companies, you know, really understand what their philosophy is, because they do. Many of them have very different philosophies, and one partnership may be very successful, whereas another may not. If the owner wants to truly be involved with the growth in partners with a private equity company that wants brand new management within a month, that is not going to be a successful partnership.
Sure. How important are company-owned units to private equity firms that are looking at, you know, a potential acquisition or investment?
I think that also depends on the private equity company. I know companies that have invested in large franchise systems with no company-owned units at all. Quiznos, for example, I mean, Avenues is a private company that has ownership in Quiznos, and Quiznos has virtually no company-owned locations. Whereas if you look at a company like Noodles, Catered and Partners, I think, acquired them a couple of years ago, where the majority of their operations is company-owned. So there are different risks involved when you have so many company-owned units. There's operational risks that are very different than, before I talked about, you've got, when you look at a due diligence of a franchise company, you're looking at the potential income stream. Now, it's 6% of gross, right? And if you know what the overall system-wide projected revenue is, you kind of know what that is. But on the expense side, it's very controllable. When you're looking at company-owned units, let's say restaurants industry in particular, there are a lot of other factors you have got to review, so there are different risks. Food costs, labor costs, they all are subject to different risks. So there are companies who may have the infrastructure to help with that type of growth, where there are private companies that may be smaller private company equity companies that do not have the infrastructure to really help a company with 80% corporate-owned location.
And that's exactly what I was going to lead towards was with respect to the smaller brands that are experiencing some great growth. I would imagine that some private equity firms would look at the fact that, maybe they've got a handful of corporate locations and they're running well as a good basis for being able to provide support, or at least, the proving the systems that are going to be used in some of these other locations. I know that's one of the reasons why Smashburger is really one of the darlings in franchising today, because they get such a high number of operating units and they're successful operating units that I imagine there's got to be a ring of potential investors constantly circling that brand right now, just because of the high number of operating units, but successfully operating units.
Right. Absolutely.
Without a doubt. So, looking at the different potential relationships when a private equity firm comes in, and especially in the case where they want the founder, the franchisor, and at least a good portion of the management team in place. Too often than not, I hear about private equity firms coming in under that scenario, and 3 or 4 years later, the founder buying the company back. What might lead to some circumstances where that would occur? And let me preface this by saying I know of one in particular that's not franchised, but got in with a private equity firm, very successful company, and both parties were very happy with the financial returns after a three-year period. But still, the founder decided he really wanted to take the company back. So what might lead to some of those type of circumstances?
Well, one is, you talked about how important relationships are, right? In the relationship the franchisees may have with their private equity company may just not work. Some private equities don't understand, I think, how important these relationships are and focus too much on the analytical part of growing a franchise system, right? Looking at the balance sheet.
Right?
It's all about the numbers. So, the relationships that I have seen that have not worked out have been, I think, principally because they just don't understand how important these relationships are. And when you really just focus on the numbers, no matter how great those numbers look, eventually it won't work. Eventually the franchisee is, whether it's new franchisees that you bring into the system who are not well integrated into the system, or your long-term franchisees who've been in the system are dissatisfied with the relationship, you're going to have, uprising is a little strong of a word, but it is kind of like an uprising when franchisees just, don't feel like they have that support that a franchisor should be giving them. And oftentimes, I think that results in a ownership change again, where the existing owner realizes what's going on and comes back in to try to save that relationship.
Yeah, I think it's important, especially with an organization that still has a lot of legacy franchisees, that initial wave of franchisees that really are attached at the hip almost to the mm-hmm. founder, and
right.
And really went through the thick and thin, and whatever that relationship might be, whether it be friends, family, whatever. So, yeah, I understand that in those cases. And then, of course, there's others like what's occurred at Rita's Isis, you know, where there's been a series of private equity firms that have bought the company for various reasons. What are some of the things that might come to your mind as to why there would be a series of private equity firms, you know, acquiring companies like Rita's?
Where it has gone through different ownership changes, all with private equity companies, huh?
Right, right.
Well, the one is, I think, the private equity companies that go into a franchise system and relatively new to franchise industry, that after 3 or 4 years, understand that this may not be the industry for them. I mean, franchising is not the industry for everyone, right? It's very different from a company that's portfolio is principally manufacturing, for example. They get into franchising and realize this is a lot more handholding than I expected. There's a lot more risk than, you know, I anticipated. So I think that's one reason that some of these companies keep changing hands. And another, maybe just the economics are not there. I've seen companies where private equity comes in, and of course, usually, you know, for many private equities, their time frame is, I want to sell the company in, you know, 5 years, right? They don't. Their plan is never to keep the investment for long term. So that may be another reason why some of these companies, once they get acquired by a private equity company, gets, you know, resold and ownership changes often. That may be the original plan.
Right.
And another reason may be that even if it's not the original plan to resell the company in 5 years, the economics may not be there. There may have been, you know, if it's in certain industry, for example, if there's a change in the industry, that whether it's technology or something else that changes the industry, that they didn't meet the numbers that they had projected. So therefore, mm-hmm. you know, they may be another private equity company who thinks, well, I can get by this company now at a lower valuation because, you know, than I would have 5 years ago, and I think I can really rebuild it.
And of course, there are going to be private equity firms that are just going to look at the excitement of the growth and not really look at what might be going on within the organization and feel, okay, well, we could just keep, you know, expanding, and it'll all work out. And that plays a big part into it. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, private equity firms are run by people. Like Mel Gibson said in the movie Payback, you go far enough up an organization, it stops with one person. And ultimately, that person just might have a feel for it and likes the growth and likes the limelight of that and will, you know, sway the decision in that regard. It doesn't mean that it's always going to be the right decision. Certainly might not be the right decision for the franchisees or the franchisor or founder. But nevertheless, it goes through. And I think that just epitomizes what we started out with. There is no one-size-fits-all. It has to do with objectives on both sides of the party, both sides of the table, to the transaction as to what they want to achieve, whether it be, you know, selling off the company, you know, 3 years from now after the acquisition, how involved the franchisor is, how involved, you know, franchisees are, as you mentioned, you know, a franchise advisory council or an association. There's a lot of moving parts to this, Amy. It's quite daunting, I think, to say the least.
Right, and that's why, frankly, I love working on these types of transactions because it's a transaction that involves a lot of creativity. Every transaction is different because between the relationship, you got the relationship between the franchisor and the private equity company that you're structuring, and then you've got the relationship between the franchisee, the franchisor, and the private equity. So it's very, every transaction is different, and you can't. This is definitely not the type of transaction where it's one size fits all. You've got to look at the personalities and the goals of each party when you're structuring these transactions.
Yeah, I think it could really be summarized in less than 10 words. Private equity should not be a knee-jerk reaction.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
But, really, just like a lot of things that we talk about on the show, whether it be franchise financing, whether it be talk about international franchising or anything like that, it really comes down to common practical common sense. I mean,
right.
It's to me, it's no different than somebody that calls a franchisor that has no vision, no thoughts, no plans to go international. Somebody calls them from Saudi Arabia and says, "I want to buy the rights to Saudi Arabia." And all of a sudden, they jump to the attention and say, "Okay, for $500,000." We'll do that, and not looking at the long-range plan. It just doesn't make any sense whatsoever, except for, an immediate, cash windfall, which ultimately may be spent trying to protect yourself or get yourself out of that transaction somewhere down the road. You might need another zero in there in order to do so.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, there are a lot of companies, I think, because of the infusion of private equity in the franchise industry, that think the answer to my problems is private equity, and you're right, it is not always the answer.
No, there's not, and there's more and more players in the private equity space. I think a lot of that led towards a lot of very talented, very connected executives that were displaced through the economic downturn for whatever reason, I think have gotten involved with some private equity firms, maybe even started some of their own private equity
mm-hmm.
funds. So of late, we hear about this all the time. Are there a couple of recent private equity transactions that really stand out in your mind as, wow, this was great. Wow, this really takes center stage. Wow, this is really good for franchising overall.
One that comes to my mind is the recent transaction, the acquisition by North Capital Partner of Curves, is one where I think it from a timing standpoint and the growth standpoint, it all makes sense, and it's good to see that private equity companies in this situation. I think it's the perfect new owner for this company. The company is such size that there are not a lot of other companies or private parties who would be able to have the capital to acquire it. And it's a company that's been around for a long time. And even though the company in recent years has, I think, diminished the size of the units has diminished, there's still a great opportunity here. And I thought it was great to see that, one, it's not in the food industry, so that's always nice to see that it's a different industry that private equity is interested in. And to see it hopefully be an opportunity to re-energize the company. Because previously it was 100% owned by, the founders, and it has for all these
mm-hmm.
years. So to me, it'll be very interesting to see a company that for so long has, we talked about relationship. I mean, the relationship of the franchisees has been with its owners, right, who have been around for a long time. But it's a great opportunity to see a company like this that needs some new energy to see what a private equity can do.
Yeah, and especially since, they have had a couple little dips in the road, if you would, and had some issues that were well-publicized. One of the
mm-hmm.
recent transactions that comes to my mind that I'm really excited about, again, also in a non-food service space, but what I really like about this is it's a relatively small brand. is what happened with Amy Nichols and Dogtopia and Thomas Franchise Solutions. Yeah, I mean, you know, 20-something units. I know they just last week announced some big deals out west. I've talked with Renee D., the president of Thomas Franchise Solutions. Look forward to meeting Peter Thomas himself. But really have a very unique methodology, I think, in what they're looking for. They're not just looking to buy up the world. I think they're really, really focused on franchise relationships and the relationship and the involvement that the founder will continue to have. And my hat's off to them because it looks like they're on the right path. And definitely kudos to Amy for really building a good brand and having a good vision. I see some good things out of them as well. And, of course, you know, Roar Capital and their investment in Massage Envy, I think might be one of the big gangbusters of the last year. And, again, non-food service, so really moving in that direction. Something I wanted to ask earlier, in your opinion, and we did talk about technology. We mentioned technology 3 or 4 times. How important is it in your mind that technology, how important is technology to private equity firms, and to what extent?
Well, I think, you know, that really depends on the industry that we're talking about. If you have if you have an industry that is service oriented, where, you know, let's say customer information is really important, and you have a franchise system with a lot of older franchisees that've been around in the system, with old POS systems where the company can't, the franchisor cannot pull the franchisee's information, right? That's potentially a huge problem when you're looking at to a private equity company. You know, again, they're about systems that are have good structure, right? That are kind of automated to a certain extent, where they can get reliable information. And if you have your system with, you know, technology that does not enable you to do that, I think that's going to be a huge factor.
Sure, I definitely agree. And it's really amazing. We're closing in on the 3-minute mark. It's amazing how much 57 minutes just blew by. And I would like that, because I did receive on social media a question, or actually just a comment, a request to talk a little bit more about Dealmaker Summit. It gives us an opportunity to promote Dealmaker Summit. See if we can gain some traction. In your estimation, in your opinion, Amy, why should franchisors participate in Dealmaker Summit?
Franchisors, I think for franchisors, it's a wonderful opportunity, one, to know the private equity that are interested in the franchise industry, and that are interested in about the size. You know, most of the Dealmaker, a lot of the franchisors that present at the Dealmakers may be a little bit smaller than, you know, the Massage Envies of the world and the Curves of the world, right?
Sure.
But so they're interested in the companies that come are interested in different sectors. They're interested in, you know, newer kind of energy in the industry. So it's great to meet, just to be able to meet them and hear from them what they're looking for. So it's a great opportunity for that. It's a great opportunity also to meet other franchisors, to see your competition, basically, and to see what they're doing and how they're preparing for private equity. One thing that never ceases to amaze me is how much information people in the franchise industry share. You know this very well, how we share information with each other. So it's a great opportunity to just network with, if not just private equity, but other franchisors, and see how other, if you're not ready yet, it's an opportunity to see how, these are the things I should plan for, to see how other franchise companies present themselves to private equity companies. It's a good learning experience as well to learn about that from that perspective.
And I think that's the big thing. thing is the educational aspect for it. Even if you're not yet ready, certainly it can educate you in many different ways. Amy, we are closing in on the top of the hour. I really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy day. My regards to Rick as well, and look forward to seeing you at an upcoming event.
Well, thank you for this opportunity. It's a great time. Thank you very
well,
much,
thank
Paul.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Bye-bye. Next week, have Barry Heller from DLA Piper talking about franchisor litigation issues. Until next week, my name is Paul Segretto, wishing you the best, the very best, in this great thing we call franchising. Franchise Today is out.